everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. We're in Prime Wednesday, and I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I am speaking to a very special gentleman. He is a musician, an artist, and an author. He's a very interesting fellow. He started playing guitar and banjo between the ages of 12 and 14, but didn't start writing his first book till he was 65. He also, in between all that time, played rock and roll. He paints. He writes poetry. He's quite the Renaissance man for kind of being a 60s rock and roller. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Robert Hayden. Hi, Bob. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Well, thank you. It's good to talk to you, Pam. I'm blushing.
Again.
You said a lot of nice things about me.
Well, you know, you've had such an interesting life that I'm really happy that you could join me. We've been talking since, you said July, I think, when we were in the green room. You said you were talking since July,
and I
love the fact that we've had a couple interruptions, a little speed bumps along the way, but here we are, and I'm glad you're here. You know, Bob, when I read your biography and a little bit about you, you have had such an interesting life that started at such a young age. Why did you decide to play the guitar? What prompted you to learn?
Well, it was interesting. I first picked up the guitar because my brother was playing the guitar, and this is when I was living in Maryland, in Kensington. And he showed me a little bluegrass. He showed me some country songs like I Walk the Line and that sort of thing. And so
sure.
When we moved to Dallas when I was 14, I happened to be in a class with Steve Miller, and he was talking about playing the guitar, and I turned around and I said, "Hey, I play the guitar too." And he said, "Well, why don't we get together?" So we got together at his house that weekend, and of course we were from two different worlds. I was playing bluegrass and country, and he was playing blues and rock and roll. And so we were sitting there, and we were both playing these old Silvertone Sears guitars. The strings were like a half an inch off the neck, and our fingers were worn out. But he said, "Can you play this?" And he showed me a little bit of some blues runs. And I said, "I think I can." I started playing. All of a sudden, he started playing a lead with me, playing the backup. And it was just the coolest thing I'd ever heard. I thought, "Well, this is so neat. There's two of us playing here together." And so we kind of kept practicing, and we added a drummer from the same school. He was one of our school classmates, and he was taking lessons from a professional in Dallas, and he was a very good drummer. And then later, Steve got his brother, Buddy Miller, to play bass with us, and we just kind of took off. We played some major shows that helped us on our way. Neiman Marcus called us, and they'd heard about us, and they wanted us to play a fashion show, so we went down to the downtown Neiman Marcus third floor to the Zodiac Room, and it had about 400 girls in there. And after the fashion show, they said, "Well, we've got some guys here that play rock and roll. Are you interested?" And the girls went crazy. And so we went up and we played our little show, and I mean, afterwards, they were just crowded around the stage, and they wanted us to play for their house parties and their schools, and that got things going. And then we, after we played the Neiman Marcus show, people heard about us all over town, and the guy, his name was Herkimer, used to do this SMU cheerleading convention where they invited girls and guys from all over the country to come and learn how to be good cheerleaders. And so we got called to play the very last night they were there. And so, of course, you're talking about 600 to 800 girls that have been cooped up in dorm rooms for 2 weeks. And so when they introduced us on stage in this auditorium and we started playing, they just went crazy. I mean, there were screams coming up from one side, and they'd slowly go through the audience and come up on the other side.
Boy, that must have been boy heaven. That was boy band heaven, wasn't it?
Oh, it was incredible. But but that's the way we took off. And then we started playing colleges, and we added Buddy Miller couldn't continue playing bass with us because he was in med school, and he just got real busy. And so Boz Skaggs, another one of our classmates, came in, and Steve showed him how to play some bass runs, and Boz started playing with us, and that became the group. And, oh, we played for about 5 to 5.5 years together. And as Steve has said so often and in the book, Kensington, we were just a very, very solid Texas blues band, and kids just loved us, especially the fraternities and sororities. It was a kind of music they could have fun with and dance with, especially dance with. And so that was how all of that got started. And
wow.
The second part of that was that Steve and Boz went away finally to University of Wisconsin. And when they left, we had to fill the shoes, so Baron Kess, the drummer, moved over to bass, and we got another drummer from the same school. He was one of our classmates, and we formed the second group. And then I wrote a song about a girl in my biology class, and her name was Suzanne, and I wrote this song, Suzanne, and we didn't expect it to do that much. We recorded it and left it at the studio for about a year. And one of the DJs at a nearby radio station was coming up the back steps one day, and he heard this song playing. And he went into the engineer and says, "What is that?" And he said, "That's a guy here in town named Bob Hayden. That's a song he wrote called Suzanne." And he said, "Well," he said, "if you get that on a label, we'll play it all over Texas." And so we got it on a label, and it started getting airplay, and it moved slowly down the charts from 30 to 27 to 21 to 17, 14, down inside the top 10. And then it got down to number 7 and 8, and then to number 4, and then it went to number 3. And we were getting all this work from it. People wanted us to play, and they were calling us and saying, "We got to have your band out here." And so we became the house band at a lot of different clubs and things, and we got called by the people starting a disco-go-go here in Dallas, and so we went up against our competition, and we won the job, and we started playing at the first disco-go-go in Dallas, and we got a Beach Boys tour. We toured with the Beach Boys, and because the song had ranked so high, and it was a fun time. It really was.
Were you playing rock and roll, Bob, or were you playing a little bit of bluegrass also, blues? What were you playing?
Okay, that was what was so original about this band, is that we had Steve Miller's heavy, heavy blues influence, but we were playing rock and roll. But it wasn't top 40 rock and roll. All of the songs that we did, I would say 80% of them, we wrote ourselves. And it was almost all original material. And it was based on a bluesy type sound, but a lot of it had the Chuck Berry rock and roll beat to it. And for kids, like fraternities that were having a beer party or whatnot, that was what they wanted. And we were just playing all the time. We played University of Texas at the Roundup. We played in Oklahoma, at University of Oklahoma. And we played all the big universities. And the older kids in the college age group, boy, they just loved this music. Just loved it.
Wow. Now, Steve Miller, though, is not known for blues so much as he is for rock and roll. Isn't that true? And yet, Bob Skaggs is absolutely known for a bluesy, jazzy sound that I like very much, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Yeah, Boz loved blues before he even joined us. And he had always loved it. And so he never really got away from what he did best. But Steve was always an experimenter. And an interesting story is that one night at 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a call. And it was Steve. He was on the line, and he said, "Well, I'm playing a house guitar with a recording studio, and I'm living out of the recording studio here in San Francisco." And he said, "But I'm recording this album." And he says, I'm doing all the instruments myself. Every night I work from about 2:30 till about 5 in the morning. And that ended up to be that first big album that he had. He had to get the band together and show them how to play all the songs on that album because they had never played any of it before. But he's an amazing guy, and he's always had his own sound and his own ideas about how to play music, and it's worked very well for him, I think.
Now, did you play with Earl Scruggs at one time?
I met Earl Scruggs. I never played with him, no. I had been playing the banjo since I was 14, and I was absolutely amazed that my father bought me this banjo. It was a very expensive banjo, and it was the same one that Earl Scruggs plays. And so I started trying to figure it out, and it took me about a year or two to figure out what he was doing, but I finally figured it out. And I love bluegrass. I used to listen to it with my brother on the radio. We'd stay up late at night just to hear a little of it. And so during the time I was playing with Steve and doing all that, I was playing the banjo, trying to figure it out. And I finally joined a group in 1970, and we started playing around in different places and for friends and that kind of thing. And we turned out to be a really good group. And I finally was able to become a recognized bluegrass banjo player at that time. And then from that point on, I joined several other groups, and I recorded that album in 1996. I think it was released in 1998. But I had asked Steve if he would play on the album for me, and he said, yeah. So it's a very unusual album in that Steve Miller actually plays guitar on some of the songs on there. And
do you still play, Bob? Do you still play guitar or banjo or both?
Well, sometimes I do book shows where I come and talk about my book, but during the course of talking about my books, I sometimes bring my guitar and the banjo and I try to play a little bit. I'm looking to join a bluegrass band right now, and I haven't been able to find something that's working well for me. But yeah, I'm trying to go back and play bluegrass again.
Do you have your banjo close by to you right now?
Oh no, I have it put up in the other room. I'm sorry.
I want you to put the phone down and go and get your banjo and pick out a couple tunes for us, or at least one tune. Will you do that? And I'm going to keep everybody amused while you go get your banjo.
All right. Yeah, I will attempt it. Played in a couple of weeks, but we can give it a try. You take care of everything, and I'll be back in a minute.
I'll take care of everything, and we're going to talk a little bit more about you. Absolutely. Okay, we're waiting for Robert Hayden to come back. He is going to pick out a couple tunes for us on his banjo. I'm thrilled. I cannot tell you how much. I love anyone who can play a banjo. It's to me amazing. So we've sent Bob to go ahead and find his banjo so he can play for us. Bob was just mentioning, in case you weren't there, he talked about going to school with Boz Scaggs and with Steve Miller from the Steve Miller Band, and he started off as a bluegrass guitarist and banjo player. So he's got some really good creds there, and I think it's interesting. He's a very creative man. He also is an artist. We're going to talk about his paintings. And he also has written a couple books. His newest one is called Kensington. It's a memoir about friendship, love, and life in a small town, which we're going to talk about that. It's kind of a montage of anecdotal stories. But I think that should be fun listening to Bob. You can find his book on Amazon and I'm sure in other places. So, we wait for Robert Hayden to come back, there he is. Okay, Bob, you're going to set your phone down and pick us out a couple, maybe some notes, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to pick out a few notes.
Okay.
It's very difficult to pick up a banjo and just start playing because you usually have to warm up a little bit, but I'll just play a little something here and there. And so
sounds good.
So
all right, here
I'll
we are. Bob Hayden.
Okay.
Go ahead. Frets there. So thank you very much for doing that. Robert Hayden on banjo. So terrific. So, I'm so glad that you still play. That's a really remarkable. I was mentioning while you were stepped away to pick up your banjo that you have such a creative life and that one of your other creative pursuits is to paint. And as a matter of fact, your paintings can be seen in a gallery in Sulphur Springs, Texas, correct? At the Connolly Street Gallery in Sulphur Springs. Tell me how you got an interest in painting, Bob.
Okay. My mother painted a little bit, but I'll tell you what really caused it. When I moved from Kensington to Dallas, I was really upset. It was a tremendously difficult thing for me. I left all my friends, I left everything I knew, and I didn't know it was going to be like that when I got to Dallas, but I was just a mess. And in my book, I explained how I messed up school and everything else. But I think because of that, I kind of turned inward. I kind of became a guy searching for something. And I didn't even know I could draw at that point. But I went to this school, and I was having a lot of trouble in school, but I joined an art club, and I started drawing. And the teachers there were so excited that I found something I was good at that they said, you can draw during study hall, anything, anytime you want to. And I started doing all these drawings, and I thought, well, gosh, I guess I can do this kind of stuff. And so then my mother got me a painting set, and she got me an easel, and I started working with painting with oils. And because of that work that I did, I got accepted at SMU to take art classes during the regular semesters. And so I went to SMU and took every single art class that I could fit into my schedule. And
wow.
I took them all, and I just fell in love with it, and I won a full scholarship at SMU with my artwork, and I went ahead and got my degree. I took all art classes for 2 years, then I had to take all the other stuff, English and all that, but I found my way out and went into commercial art for a number of years and kind of got away from painting, which is what I loved. But I've been able to get back to the painting now. Now that I don't have to work, I'm basically retired at this point. And mm-hmm. So it's fun to be back in the galleries. It's fun to be working on art. I have a great art room here at my house, and there's nothing to hold me back. And I just entered a global art competition with the Artist Magazine, and I'm going to be in a show here in Winsboro just in a couple of weeks called Men in Art. And so I try to do things which are pretty local. I don't like to get away from here very much, but getting into painting was an exciting thing. And I didn't know what I was doing when I was young, when I was 14 or 15, but I did a lot of excellent pencil work and did a lot of drawings. And if you have an extra moment, I can tell you a kind of an interesting story real quick.
I have plenty of time, but before you tell me that story, I would like you to describe what your favorite subjects are of your art, so we can kind of get a visual idea of what it is you like to paint.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of like the Southwest and Arizona, I think I'm like Georgia O'Keefing, you know, and I'm wondering, is that what you like to paint? Do you do Western painting? Do you do, I don't know, what kind of painting do you like to do? And what is your, I don't know, genre, is it, for painting? Style?
Yeah, I have two. I like not realism, but representational art. I don't get into realism, which is the really, really hard line type of art that looks like photographs.
Right.
That's another deal. But I get into representational, and when I do landscapes, most of them I make up out of my head. I'm not really painting a particular place, and they're mostly of the rough country. And I know you're not familiar with it, but we have an area here in West Texas called Palo Duro Canyon, and it's nothing but sagebrush and cactus and that sort of thing, and cliffs and high places and low places. It's kind of a small Grand Canyon is what it is.
Interesting.
And I love going out there and hiking, and it gives me my ideas for the kind of paintings I enjoy. But I like other more pastoral type scenes, farms and just pretty mountains and that kind of thing. But I also love abstract painting. And I'm
really
talking about the kind of painting that was done back in the 40s, 50s, 60s range. I do the old style abstract. I learned that at SMU from my teacher, who was great at it. At first, I didn't want anything to do with it. I thought it was stupid. But then as I started figuring out what he was talking about, I realized how hard it was. You have to balance shapes, and you have to balance colors, and you have to put it all together so that it's not just a bunch of loosey-goosey junk, but so that it actually makes sense when you look at it. And I love doing abstract. The show I have at Connolly Street Gallery right now is mostly abstract, but at one time it was all landscape, so I switch back and forth quite a bit. But
what
I
is your medium, Bob? What kind of paints do you like to use? What is the medium?
I'm most comfortable with oil. I've been painting in oil my whole life. But if I want to do something quick and I want it to dry fast, I will go to acrylics and paint it because it's dry almost as fast as you put it on the canvas. And so you can make little changes and you can finish a painting and maybe in a day, though I've never accomplished that, but I guess it's possible. But
and what do you like to paint on? Do you like to paint on traditional artist canvas or do you paint on other surfaces?
Well, I'm very comfortable with canvas and I like the linen canvas better than the cotton. If I'm really looking to do something hard line and with a lot of detail, then I definitely go to the linen canvas. The abstract work that I do, mostly I do that on cotton canvas. And I like canvas and I like stretchers. That's the way I like to paint. If I'm going to do something on a hard board, I was in commercial art for a long time, for about 20 years in Dallas. And that's a different thing entirely. I used to mostly work in acrylics to do commercial art, but it's a very hard line, very realistic type thing that you do in commercial art, and a different kind of world, I think. There's a lot of people
right.
who disagree with me on that, but
It's interesting that that you're on because last week I had an artist friend who was visiting me, and as I'm sitting here in my studio, I'm looking above me at a beautiful triptych that was done, and she makes her own paints and tints and colors and uses all kinds of different surfaces. I don't even know what the style is. It's just her own particular style, but I'm an aficionado of art. I'm a collector to a certain extent, but I don't have an extensive collection. So I'm very fond of artists who use painting and drawing and color as their medium. Now, your artistic side came out when you decided to write a book. The first book you wrote was a murder mystery called The Panhandle Murders, But you've just now written a memoir about Kensington, which was your home in just outside of Washington, D.C. in Maryland, correct?
Right. That's right.
So
yeah.
My question to you is, what motivated you, or, you know, what spurred you on to write about Kensington? And may I assume, and maybe wrongly, but the cover art on your book, is that what your home looked like?
Yeah, that is our home. That was our first home in Kensington. Yeah.
It's a
beautiful
home.
Yeah, that picture
home.
Means a lot to all of us in the family because it reminds us of a lot of real good times back then.
What made you decide to write this book?
I wanted to tell the story. I don't know why, but I wanted for people to know how difficult it was, what I lost when I moved to Dallas, and what effect it had on me. I've had people get in touch with me who have read the book, and they've said, you know something, I went through almost that exact same thing when I moved, and they agree with me that it was just a terrible thing to go through, especially at that age when you're 14, 15 years old.
Sure.
Kensington was an ideal small town with a great little downtown area and a great neighborhood, and then the woods that went on for miles and miles, and we could hike back in those woods and get just completely away from everything. And it was just an ideal childhood. And when I left there, I was excited about coming to Dallas. But when I got to Dallas, it was cathartic. It was just, I never expected that to happen. If it hadn't been for Steve Miller, I don't know really where I would have ended up. Because,
you know, it's interesting you said that, because while you had this idyllic life in a very small town, and it sounds like, you know, a Main Street USA, and yet you moved to Texas, but still kind of found your groove there, yet you were longing for your hometown. So I'm struck by the contrast there. Do you think had you stayed in Kensington, you would have had this beautiful creative life that you had?
Now, there is a great question. I've asked myself that question. And you know something? I don't think I would have. I don't know what I would have gone into, but I probably never would have known that I could draw. I probably never would have been that much on a guitar. I probably would have just fooled around with it for a few years and just left it. That may very well have been the result of moving to Dallas, is that I found this creative side. And you know something? I think if a person reads this book, Kensington, that will start to come out as you read it. You read the beginning of it, you find out what happened to me, and then you go to the story and you find out what life was like. When you lose all your friends and you lose your schools and you lose your home and everything that you know about, every single thing that you know in life, and you leave it, it's a hard thing for a young teenager to go through.
Oh,
when you have to start over.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I wonder, you know, have you ever been back to Kensington and to that area since you've been an adult?
I went back that one time that I talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I went back in around 90. I left in 57, actually 56. That was December of 1956 when we left. And
mm-hmm.
I came back 20 years later. It was about 1977.
And what was the town like?
Oh, everything was mostly the same. It's funny. Everything was mostly the same. The only trouble was I didn't know anybody. There wasn't any place to go. I couldn't go to my friend's house or anything like that. Everybody was gone. So,
I wonder what it would be like if you went back now. Not that you have any inclination or desire to, but I would imagine things have changed quite a bit. And so You know, I'm glad that you went to Dallas, because without you having, we may never have discovered your great talents, because you're so creative in so many different things. Will you write another book, do you think, Bob?
Oh, I've got several planned. I just finished a new one that I just took it off the dining room table and took it back to the computer. I always write everything in longhand first on notebook paper. And as I'm going along, I make changes, and I keep on reading it over and over and over again and making more and more changes. By the time I get to the computer, I know where I'm going. And this book is a sequel to my first book. So that I've written it so that if you read my first book, The Pan Handle Murders, this picks up where the other one took off. But on the other hand, this book stands by itself. You don't have to read the first book.
Good. I like this. I don't want to be the first to read something. I want to read work that appeals to me right there in the moment. So I'm glad you did that. It's not a mandatory that you have to go back and read a book. You know, Bob, I'm thrilled that I have to talk to you. We're almost out of time, and I've taken way longer than I told you I would, and I apologize for that. But you're so interesting, and you've had such an interesting life. I'm very envious of your life as a musician and a painter and an author. I will tell you that I love music, and I played piano and organ all my life. Until my hands were damaged and I couldn't play anymore. So I am envious of anybody now who can play, and someone who can sing, because I could probably shatter glass, but not because I could hit a high note, just because it'd be so horrible. Love art. My mom was a wonderful artist and very creative. I have none of that talent, none whatsoever. I can barely draw stick figures, so I envy you that. And while I am a voracious reader, I could never write a book. And that, my friend, is just spectacular. It has been an honor speaking to Robert Hayden. I hope one day you'll come back and you'll call me up and say, "Hey, Pam, I'm ready to come back and talk to you. Will you do that?"
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. When this next book is done, I think that it's going to be a big book for me, and I'm hoping we can get together again and have a little bit more fun. I've really enjoyed this. I've really enjoyed it. You're
really
very good at what
too.
You do.
And so thank you, and I think you're very good at what you do. How about we make a deal next time? You make sure your finger and your key, your strings are warmed up, whether it's on the guitar or the banjo, and you kick us off with a song, and then we'll talk. Would that work?
That sounds good.
All right. Folks, Robert Hayden, please go. If you're in Sulphur Springs, Texas, stop by the Connolly Street Gallery and say hello. I'm sure that the town is not so big and bustling that someone can't find artist musician Robert Hayden for you. Bob, my best wishes for holidays for you. So glad you spoke. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday.
You too, and I really appreciate it. It was really fun. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Good night.
Good night.
That's our show for tonight, folks. I want to thank you for being with me. I am so lucky that sitting in my studio with me tonight is the fantastic author and host of Blue Plate Special, Terry Lynn Koop. Terry's going to broadcast live from my studio on Friday night. She's talking to Tess Gerritsen. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we are joining our author friends at Miami Book Fair International. And then Terry will broadcast her following show here. And then, you don't have a show then? Oh, that's right. Thanksgiving. She's not broadcasting. That means I have an extra day. And then we're going to be at Noir at the Bar Tampa with Eric Pruitt, Steph Post, Jeffrey Hess, Don Brenz, Terry Lynn, and hopefully any of you out there who are in the area, come on by and see us. Have a great night. Thanks for being with me, folks, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.